Hi, my name is Alison Spittle. You're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show. Today, I'm joined by Ellen Coyne, who's a fantastic journalist. She is with the Irish edition of the Times. They run their editions from Monday to Saturday, but not on the Sunday, because that's the Sunday Times, which is a totally different newspaper. I know. So, yeah, you have to listen to her because she's great fun. She's also a fantastic investigative reporter. And I asked her about some of her undercover stings that she did on Bastards lately. I'll call it that. She didn't. She really is an inspiring class lady, and you should have a listen. Thanks. This is the Like, you're a bit like Lois Lane, as in you're a journalist and you're having an affair of a superhero.
That's my life.
I never got the dynamic of that, though. Like,
I feel like she kind of got a raw deal because she comes across as a bit of a dope in that she's a journalist and doesn't recognise somebody when they have glasses on.
That's so true.
So, like, I feel like that was, but I was on, I was using Tinder for a while.
Yeah.
And I actually had to put in my bio, you know, where you're under pressure to be really, like, interesting and pretty.
Yeah.
I had to actually put down a request to stop men messaging me, asking me if they could be the Superman to my Lois Lane. I was immediately being given, like, the sidekick role in my own rom-com. It was so upsetting. But yeah, people say that a lot. But yeah, I'll buy into, like, the being the really sexy and cool reporter. But yeah, I think that's probably where they compare. Unfortunately, not having an affair with a superhero either.
So they thought they were Superman in this.
Good for, there's nothing like male confidence, is there?
No, like, especially on Tinder.
It's such a resource. I feel like if you could bottle it, you could probably make nuclear weapons out of it. But yeah, it was so common that I actually had to put a disclaimer to be like, can you please stop?
That's crazy.
I'm mixing all of you up. You all look like Conor McGregor already. I need to have some sort of differentiating feature for you.
And did you have like you know, your full name comes up on Tinder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you have people research you and then try and talk to you about, like interview you almost and go, so, what was it like being an undercover investigator?
It's linked to your Facebook, and I have my job on my Facebook,
right.
But sometimes people try to send you messages and stuff.
Yeah.
And I did not know before, well, I suppose there's a fetish for everything, but there's men out there who think it's attractive if you're a reporter, and I think it probably goes down to, like, if men, I think, try to fetishize intelligent women, because instead you're either intimidating or it's like a sexy quirk. So yeah you kind of get that a little bit.
It's neither in between.
Yeah, but I was kind of horrified but also fascinated that apparently being a reporter was like a boost for that.
That's like being fat as well. Like, they'd be like, I don't, it's either like, I'm not attracted to you, or oh my god. Oh, girl.
There's no in between, is there? They're like, men are like, I can either love this or hate this.
Yeah.
I can't be ambivalent about this.
I'm ambivalent about your journalism.
Yeah, exactly. It's like everything is something that has to, they just can't see it as just your profession. It's some sort of like kink.
Right.
I don't know, men are weird.
It's like, you know, Titanic, where Kate Winslet's like, paint me like one of your French girls. Report on me like one of your...
Of your TDs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so what would you report on mostly? You work for the Irish edition of the Times on Sunday?
Thank you. The Irish edition of the Times of London on the Monday to Saturday edition of the Times. No, sorry, I'll get sued. It's the Ireland edition of the Times.
Right.
And I cover social affairs and politics, which is a lot of women things.
Yeah.
So things like domestic abuse, the Eighth Amendment, sexual violence, all of that sort of thing.
Class crack.
Really? Yeah. There was one radio presenter who I won't name who said that I was the misery porn correspondent.
Wow.
For the Times. Yeah, so that's that's my job. It makes me great crack in the pub though when you're recalling all these horrific stories. My flatmate has like PTSD from listening to me
coming home.
Like offloading on her.
I'm so like that in when comedians come that are from not from Ireland and have no idea about Ireland, and I'm like, you won't believe what we do to women over here. Did you know that condoms, the Virgin Megastore tried to sell condoms in the early 90s? They ripped out pages of Cosmopolitan.
Literally, it's kind of like you try to outdo. It's the only way you can cope with it. So you meet a British reporter and you're like, well, guess what we do? we only got the morning after pill in 2011.
Like, woo! Yeah. But you have Brexit, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's not try. And it's weird because now it feels like Ireland is like the grown-up island.
Yeah.
Like, I saw there was a discussion about UKIP and Brexit on Twitter that I was looking at this morning, where people were genuinely arguing about whether or not the government should stop people from fucking dogs. And I just feel like, you know, a couple of years ago, Britain was kind of like the big grown-up one who would come over here and, just, you know, talk to you about the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
And now you're just looking at them and you're like, so Enda Kenny is the statesman now of Europe. We're the ones that, like, didn't fuck up.
No, and now we're like, stop fucking dogs.
We're like, please stop trying to bring back the death penalty.
That is crazy.
I know.
And how long have you been covering social issues within Ireland, and how much has it changed? Do you know, I don't even give a specific year, because I feel that's a bit weird. I always, like, when I get interviewed sometimes, like, they'll just ask me questions and they go, how old are you? I'm like, sorry?
Oh, sorry.
What?
What?
Are you single? I'm like, okay, didn't know it was going to take this turn. But, you know, I'm a Gemini.
If you must know. No, yeah. It's actually, I think it's, I'm heading into my third year now.
Okay.
It was around May when I started. I moved back from the UK. I had been working covering politics for BBC Wales.
No way. So did you have to cover
don't like, act
the,
like that's cool.
The mini parliament in Wales.
They don't like it when you call it that to their face. Yeah. Oh, it was so bleak. Like, we did a poll, BBC Wales did a poll, and I was covering politics, right?
Yeah.
And for all you devolution fans, health and education are devolved to Wales. So right. The Welsh government runs the schools and the hospitals. But Labour, which has been in power in Wales for like 15 years, kept like storming back in. And we did a poll and it turns out that like over half the people in Wales thought the Tories in London were like running their schools and their hospitals. So they were literally voting for the wrong people. I mean, as a journalist, that's pretty dispiriting if you're like, what am I doing? I'm covering a government that people don't even know exists.
No, because I didn't even know that about. I knew they had a parliament. And I know that Scotland has a parliament and Scotland seems like far more in control. They're just angry.
They're a bit more assertive, aren't
they? They are.
They're a bit more like,
good on them.
Yeah, good on you, Scotland.
Like, I think some people vote for, like in regional parts, some people vote just to tell the big man about, fuck you.
Like a really pathetic middle finger. They're like,
yeah,
we're going to send the biggest dope we know into that parliament and undermine the entire democratic process.
And I used to, I'm supposed to talk about, like, what's the difference? But most, I know we have a different, like, voting system. And but what's the biggest difference between, like, the UK and Ireland, politics-wise? Is it true that we're more parish pumpy? I can't.
I think the one thing that, like, it's, so as a journalist, you're supposed to be covering the news, right? It's pretty straightforward. The thing that I've noticed a lot with Ireland is that we're only really like righteous
right
about correcting things retrospectively. So like I'm finding myself like writing stories now about like mother and baby homes, which were shut down before I was in primary school, or, you know, redress schemes to sort out things, or an amendment that was introduced in the 80s. Yeah. And it seems like in Ireland, we're like, sure, we'll pass this now, it'll be grand. And then 30 years later, there's like a litany of human rights abuses. And we're like, well, maybe we might take a second to look at that. Whereas in the UK, like, I suppose people criticise UK politics for always like looking for a head. So when somebody does something bad, they're like, you're all fired.
Yeah.
And we don't really do that here, but it's not an accountable country. Like, I just don't think we're comfortable with holding ourselves to account. And I don't know if that comes from like taking pride in being like a self-governing state. But sometimes I do wonder, like, you look at the things that I'm covering in relation to women, and it's not like an argument you'd make in the pub on St. Patrick's Day, but is there a kernel of truth in the fact that women might have been better off under British rule because we made such a balls of it when we got control ourselves and we just turned women into second-class citizens.
Yeah, but you get so much anger about that. Where
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
You West Brit.
yeah, exactly. I work for a subsidiary of the Times of London, so I'm already cutting it pretty fine. But like nobody, I don't think like, surely it's worse to imply that Irish people are just naturally more misogynistic and that we're more prone to setting up institutions like Magdalen Laundries. Like, that's way more offensive. Isn't it better to be like, no, we created a theocracy and we just let the church take control straight away, rather than be like, now we're just all really sexist. Like, that's just like a way more insulting argument if, like, you're a patriot.
It's like, it's dubstep music. It's just come along. Even Justin Bieber's into it now.
Exactly.
So, how do you think? What do you think? It, like, there needs to be change within the system, or is it who we vote for? Or because you're from the country yourself,
I am. Yes.
And I feel if I have an opinion on politics, I remember I covered the election for News Talk, and it was just basic. Like, the election day, I had to go on Twitter and just share pictures and go, ooh, we're silly. Someone lost a ring in a box. Like, it's just, it felt like that. But if I even made one joke about Jackie Healy Ray,
yeah,
they would be like, there would be lots of people just tweeting me going, how dare you?
How dare you?
That man is a fantastic man. Kerry people are very strong. And I'm like, it's not. I come from Westmead. I voted for the lad that got my mum her council house. I'm in no position. And I don't think he even had the power to get my mum that council house.
He just like happened to be there at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, you have a house now.
Yeah, he's a good egg.
I remember that now.
Exactly. And as soon as I was 18, I was like, bang, number one, that guy.
I recognise him.
Yeah, it is. It's so, do you think there's going to be any way that we can talk about this or address it without making people alienated?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think it's kind of like, I suppose women do make a difference. Like, there is so much, it's amazing how hostile people get about the gender quotas thing. But there is evidence that when you have more women in politics, you do become like a slightly more compassionate country. But like, politics is, for someone, like, when we grew up watching the news, we probably thought a tribunal was just a party you got when you were finished being Taoiseach. Because it just seemed like there was one all the time.
There was just like a blood tribunal. Like, what's with the blood? How did you change blood?
I had no idea. It's like tribunal. The word tribunal was on the news as often as like sunny spells and scattered showers. Yeah. It was just like a word that was constantly around. And sometimes I speak to reporters who are a little bit older than me, who covered like the crash and what sounded like just a fucking gas house party that you weren't there for. Yeah. And the way they reflect on it, you kind of do think, what was that like? But I suppose the heart you take from it is that people talk about that like a thing that used to happen, that politics isn't like that anymore. But I suppose, like, we've got this stalemate situation where even if we had an election now, we wouldn't have a minority government because people are still kind of holding with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but there's all these little parties to the left and the right. So it kind of seems like nothing's been done really since the last election. There doesn't seem to be, the government doesn't seem to have any power to do anything radical or anything that it really wants to. And I mean, Micheál Martin is probably secretly the Taoiseach anyway, because he's got so much power.
Yeah.
So it just, I suppose it's really hard to get people to care about politics, but it's not, I know that it pisses young people off when you say this, but the reason that they don't give a shit about what 26-year-old women want or the issues that matter to us is because we don't vote.
No.
Ever.
No.
And I don't think it's enough to only do it when it's like a big referendum or, you know, it's a big kind of happy moment afterwards. Like, the election last year should have been the biggest turnout for young people because of what happened the year before with the marriage equality referendum. And why on earth would politicians bend over backwards, put anything in their manifesto that suits people like me and you if they won't get any return for it or any reward? But then it's a never ending circle because you're never going to see a political party that you want to vote for because you don't vote. So it's just going to remain that way for a very long time, I suppose.
And do you vote back home or do you vote in Dublin?
I vote in Dublin.
Yeah. I think that's a confession. I recently changed to Dublin.
How did that feel?
It felt like
a betrayal.
It felt like a massive betrayal as well, because the person I normally vote for back home nearly didn't get elected. I was like, oh.
That was me.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Willie. Oh, no.
I'm so sorry I let you down. I should have commuted.
There was 2 days worth of vote counted as well. He was nearly gone.
Oh, my God. I remember that. The never-ending count.
Yeah. And I was like, fully, I was there.
Storming at the last second, holding it off, like at the end of the film.
Yeah, yeah. But what got you interested in politics, actually?
I wasn't. I never, ever wanted to be a political reporter. And it wasn't until, I suppose, I started working for The Times that the penny dropped, that stuff like shitty domestic abuse laws and really crap rape sentences.
Yeah.
Like all of these things that just make your life really shit as a woman. There is a minister somewhere responsible for that. So those are the people that you're supposed to be holding to account on it. And the thing that I really, really love about my paper is, it's kind of, I think it's different because things that matter to women, women's issues are always on the front page. Whereas sometimes I think those things can get pushed to like the lifestyle section, or it'll be like a feature.
Yeah, but part of your lifestyle.
Yeah, like instead of being like, okay, 14 women and children a day are turned away from refuge centres every day in Ireland last year because there's no space. And they're not counted in the homelessness figures. And no minister will take responsibility for them. But like that's a shitty statistic, and it would make for a pretty good like Saturday read. But actually it belongs on the front page, or, you know, when you're putting a microphone into Simon Coveney's face or Catherine Zappone's face, just going, what on earth are you doing? Like, I think there's a problem with women's issues being seen as not political.
When it's just seen as other. We even have to say women's issues.
Exactly. It's a fringe thing. It's like something that you talk about in a tent at Electric Picnic.
Yeah.
But it affects so many people. It's half the electorate. And there is a minister that if we have a situation where women can't go to refuges because they think they're going to end up homeless and they're afraid to stay in their house because they might be killed by their partner, that's a minister's fault.
Yeah.
It's not a natural phenomenon.
Why aren't they counting those people as homeless?
This wrecks my head so much, right? So domestic abuse and rape services, you know, like the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre or like Women's Aid, for some reason that I can't comprehend, that is the responsibility of the Department of Children and Youth Affairs. And I really think that harks back to this idea of women always being mothers or caregivers rather than individuals in our own right. So when you have a situation like that, a department that's supposed to be looking after children, adoption, fostering, has women as kind of like an extra thing to look after. So that means Simon Coveney, who's in charge of housing, doesn't have to bother with, women who are domestic abuse victims or men who are domestic abuse victims because they're not counted in the homelessness statistics.
Yeah. What would happen with a man if he was domestically abused? I mean, can he go to a woman? He can't go to a women's refuge.
No, I think Women's Aid offers services for men as well. Yeah, because
that's
it is
really weird of me to presume that wouldn't happen.
No, it is called Women's Aid, so it's fair enough. It's fair enough. Yeah, but obviously I did. I shouldn't have generalised there and said that all domestic abuse victims are women.
No, you didn't. You said men as well.
Yeah.
That's why I asked. I generalised in my head, and that's why I had to go, oh. A record scratch. Hold up.
Exactly. Am I being sexist?
Yeah, that's what I say every day.
Every day, am I being sexist?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the point is, whether you're a man or a woman, you can't go to a refuge at the moment. And it was mainly women and children who were turned away 14 a day every day last year. And then you've got like the justice minister who's supposed to be writing the laws about domestic abuse and all this sort of stuff. And she doesn't have any control over the funding that those centres get. It always seems to me that whether it's health or whatever, the things that matter to women are always the last thing to get sorted. So like there's women in Cork who have actually got serious gynecological problems, right? And if it was a waiting list, like you saw on the news all through winter, people waiting on trolleys was the top of the agenda all the time.
Yeah.
But this never seems to make it to the top. And I just think it's too much of a coincidence that the things that matter to women are always the things left to the end or left to the side or aren't really picked up as much.
What if they had a minister for women? And I know it seems very condescending.
Yeah, But like,
but
is
if there's
it
no other, if things are falling through the cracks, there needs to be some other department or.
You're right, actually. I mean, it is, like you said, it's we don't like the idea.
Yeah, but and then we get a man, like, to be the head of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just to balance it out.
Some of the Healy Rays can just like take over that department.
He'd
just
love it.
10 million civil service men and one woman at the top.
Yeah.
But maybe it's like...
The gynecological department that Kerry is world class. World class.
Like a golden kind of glass.
We got the best vaginas in Ireland. We got the best... Should be like at the top.
Nobody has more respect for vaginas than we do. Wouldn't that be great if they were like battling to have like the best women's services in their constituency? I could. That is parish pump politics that I could absolutely get behind.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, what has been the most, talking about parish pump politics, and like I am so when I talk about it as well, I hate that people might think that. Especially judging by the bus crisis that happened. And like, I used to rely on buses so much in Westmead. And I have a bike here, I don't give a fuck. And when, so when the thing happened in Dublin, when the buses were happening, I was like, well, I don't care. Do you know what I mean?
It's so easy. I mean, that's why politics is personal. It should be the things that, and I'm sure there are people who are like, shut up about vaginas for a minute, but it's, of course I care about it and cover it because it's happening to like my friends and it's affecting me directly.
And you look at that type of stuff and you go, it could happen to me.
Exactly. I think it's okay to be selfish in those instances.
I love people that were like, felt they were really left leaning until a strike happened and it was inconvenient.
Like, the love in Dublin socialism, as I call it.
Oh, that's a great.
Like, oh my God, we get like mimosas. Oh, strike. Ew. Can't get the Lewis to brunch anymore. Ew, guys.
Do you know that Lewis drivers, they don't have any skills.
Exactly.
And then I'm trying to think of maybe times my views have changed where I've been horribly selfish. No, I'm perfect.
I'm politically immaculate. I'm the ideal socialist.
Generally, you're champagne socialist. Yeah. I'm a perfect socialist.
I'm the perfect one.
But so you weren't even that politically active before you became a journalist?
Never, ever. Like, not from a political family at all. Didn't have a clue. Sure, I didn't have a clue about Irish politics when I came back over. I'd studied in Wales and had a cursory knowledge. Like, I knew who the Taoiseach was, but that was about it.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
You were like really unsullied. Because I feel like I was brought up in a massive Labour house, right?
Right.
And even at that, like, you know, when they do shit wrong, and I'm just like, oh.
Guys.
Oh, guys, come on.
Guys, no.
Pat Rabbit was for so you. Cool. He used to make little quips about Paris Hilton, and I thought he was the funniest man.
The minister for millennials.
Yeah, they should have one of those.
I think that's Pascal Donoghue.
Really?
He loves Beyonce.
I love that article that came out about...
That was so good. I can't believe he didn't feature more strongly in that because he's very strong opinions on Beyonce.
Really?
What's he was this? On like Sean O'Rourke yesterday and he was asking why he wasn't asked about Ed Sheeran because he was going to like 2FM or something.
Sorry, what's his job?
Minister for Public Expenditure. But like, that's like, I can get behind that. That's the kind of populism we need.
Yeah, about Ed Sheeran.
Like, you won't believe these 10 things the Department of Public Expenditure is announcing next year. Number 6 will shock you.
Exactly. He could like, you know, Beyonce is tax free. You know. What does public expenditure do?
It's all the money.
No.
Just all the money that we have. It's like the exchequer.
If there's like a inquiry, like in 15 years' time, it's like all this money has been funneled into Beyonce Knowles' account and Pascal's there.
I can't believe you're going to libel the minister by implying some sort of tribunal into like concert. It's him, the Ticketmaster problem. It's Pascal Donoghue.
He is the Ticketmaster. So which TD is the best crack?
Oh yeah, I can't.
You can't.
No way I can answer that. Okay. Just have to pick one from every party for balance.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would. Who?
Don't ask me which one is least crack either.
Okay. You're such a journalist, you know my ways.
Anticipate those questions.
I bat them right off. Don't
exactly.
Even,
forget like, about it. Well, I'm glad you asked, Alison, before I don't answer the question.
Could you answer a question in a way a politician would answer a question if okay. I asked you like silly questions?
Right, okay, let's.
Okay, let's think.
I'll be the Minister for Women.
Minister for Women.
Hello.
Okay, hello.
Good to see you. Hello, listeners.
Hi. So, Minister, thank you for coming in today. Minister, do you remember Bubbaloos? They were the little bubble gums with a liquidy inside. What was the liquid made out of?
That is a very good question, Alison. And
thank
I
you.
Think that Bubbaloos are important. There's a lot of people listening who will remember Bubbaloos. And there's a lot of people who maybe have bad experiences with Bubbaloos. And I just
but all I want to know, Minister, thank
yes,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
All I want to know is what is the liquidy stuff? Inside? Well, just the ingredients now.
Well, if you'll let me finish, Alison. I'm just about to get to that. This government has been strong on Bubbaloos. The Minister for Man has never said anything about Bubbaloos. And I wonder why the media doesn't have him in here answering questions about
He's not available.
Yeah, it's amazing, Alison, how those ministers never seem to be available to answer the difficult questions.
Did they really get that
Bubbaloos.
Shitty with you? At that point?
Yeah, they really did.
I mean, you need your arms folded and you give me the stink face.
They're so mean to us.
Really?
I'm such a fragile person. You wouldn't want to have like a rejection complex.
With
oh my God, it's so sad. You can see like, you know the song Hello by Adele?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
That's my text to TDs. It's just all blue. And there's no like grey response. It's like, hey Minister, when you get a chance, could you? And they're all like, no.
And when will they answer? Like when?
That is the perpetual question, yeah.
Yeah. So you're not from a political family.
No.
And you didn't really have that big of an opinion on politics.
No.
Do you think that's helped you?
I think so, yeah. I think it's good to have a little bit of healthy scepticism for all of them. Not kind of, I think you would have to watch yourself if you were getting, because you're not a robot, you're a human being, and if you do have political views, it is really hard. I think the best line to take is that you should always be having a go, you should be the opposition as well. You should also be like the unofficial opposition party. So absolutely just keep having a go at the government and holding them to account.
Yeah.
There's definitely more of a public interest in us, you know, looking at what Fine Gael and the Independents are doing rather than scrutinising, you know, Labour and the AAPBP every day because they're not in power. So I think just see yourself almost as the permanent opposition.
Mm.
And that's probably the best way to do it.
And you've done some undercover reporting for the Irish edition of The Times that comes out on a Sunday. We should abbreviate that. Tits.
It's The Times of London, Daily Digital Online, Sunday London edition.
Oh my God.
No, it's just the Ireland edition of The Times. My editor is going to kill me.
The Ireland edition of The Times.
Yes. On a Monday and a Tuesday. Sorry, I'll let you
Is it on a Monday and a Tuesday?
It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the Sunday Times.
It's separate.
Yes, our sister paper. I think that's what.
That's your sister paper.
Yeah, cool. That's the word. Sister paper?
Sister paper. So can you tell me a bit like how long it takes to do an undercover report?
Ages.
Yeah.
The actual undercover bit, like sending somebody in.
Yeah.
It's like an hour and then.
Do you feel like Harriet the Spy?
It's like little camera kits and stuff and I'm like, I shouldn't be trusted with this. But it's months and months and months of going through like financial accounts and finding out who these organisations are, who they're linked to, when they were set up, if they were set up under a different name, all of that sort of thing. And I suppose because we did it twice, so we did it in, I think it was like October last time. Obviously, these people aren't idiots. So if you did another investigation straight away,
right,
they'd probably expect it. So we had to leave a little bit of time as well. So it didn't take quite so long the second time. But they were just as brazen when we did the investigation the next time. And it was actually worse because they almost referenced what we'd done before by saying some comment like, we've been accused in the media, you know, of exaggerating the effects of abortion, and that's not true. So our investigation doesn't seem to have made a difference to the mentality of those people at all.
And you it felt like there was going to be a difference though to the law after the first investigation.
Yeah.
And what's happening with that? So should I tell the listeners, like, maybe, do you know what, give a bit of context for this, because I feel that we're talking
as if
we're friends.
As if, which is obviously not
yeah,
true.
Yeah, of course not.
Can't stone you.
Yeah, exactly. Can't stone you. But can't keep away either.
Sorry, right. So the Ireland edition of the Times did an investigation into crisis pregnancy agencies, which are unregulated under Irish law. If you don't get any money from the HSE, you can say whatever you want. So there's a lot of agencies out there, like the Women's Centre on Berkeley Street, Gianna Care on Dorset Street, and Ask Magella, which also uses an office on Dorset Street. They're the
is
three.
That related to Ask Jeeves? Or you should investigate Ask Jeeves.
Why didn't you? I need to like find out the connection there.
What? You should type into their search and ask Jeeves, why didn't you stop Magella? Why?
Where were you, Jeeves? How could you let her do this? Anyway, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. So, I totally interrupted you to make a shitty Ask Jeeves joke.
So those agencies they're all connected to anti-abortion groups, but they kind of portray themselves as an objective source of information. So you go in, you say, I've got a crisis pregnancy, I'm looking at my options. And between the three of them, they make claims like abortion causes breast cancer, could turn you into a child abuser. Gianna Care claimed that all women who terminate their pregnancy will regret it, which does not line up with international research at all. And then Ask Magella said all of the stuff about breast cancer and that you'd lose all your female organs. And then went a bit further and said that a crisis pregnancy is a good thing because it makes you stop and think about how you could die from having sex. And they're also like, well, anti-contraception as well.
You could die from having sex like on a cliff edge or like, God, I'm two thrusts more. Like,
it's obviously very, very serious. But I was trying to show the video to my flatmate because she's my age. And I was like, you know, you're the women affected by this. And she was watching it and she was like, oh my God, that is awful. And it got to the part where she was like, you know, you can die from having sex. And I was watching her face and I was like, how is she going to react? She just turned to me and was like, Jesus, I wish.
Like, make it more exciting.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But they were like, no, they were saying that STIs are often fatal. This group as well is really against the morning after pill because it thinks it has a moral problem with the morning after pill. It would kind of equate that with terminating a pregnancy in their mind.
Right.
So it goes further than saying an abortion will kill you and you'll regret it for the rest of your life. And it's basically saying just don't have sex. Like the gym teacher in Mean Girls.
Yeah, do they suggest something else that you can do other than sex?
Like any hobbies?
Yeah.
I know they didn't. They
crochet.
Didn't They're really good at knitting.
How do they feel about, you might not know. No, I was going to say, how do they feel about wanking? But that's like...
I'll ask the next time.
Just get your undercover person and just ask about wanks.
I can't believe you're really pointing out all the holes in my investigation.
I'm sorry.
The questions we didn't ask.
That's why I'm asking them now.
Should bring them in, ask yourself.
I will. I'll go in with a camera like, in a handbag. How do you feel about wanking?
I'd be interested to know what the side effects are.
Yeah, what would be the side effects?
Well, I don't know.
Guilt.
Perpetual guilt.
What's
your hands will fall off.
Yeah. So obviously... That must have been, how did it feel? Yeah, like you were doing the report and you had an undercover person going in. How did you feel your relationship with the undercover person? Were you like protective of them or what
so
was the...
So protective.
Yeah.
My God. She was at the appointment for a really long time. And at one point I kind of started panicking, was like, we know that these people are extreme enough that they're willing to set up a crisis pregnancy agency, pay for it to be advertised. Like, that's how staunch their beliefs are.
Yeah.
What will they do if they suss her out or see the camera or figure it out? And I did get kind of scared, but like the reporter was absolutely fantastic. And I mean, to go in that sort of situation under that amount of pressure is like you're sitting in a room with people who you know do not have your best interests at heart.
Yeah.
So there's, and we know that when we, obviously when you do investigations, you have to go to those people at the end and be like, so we've done an undercover investigation into you, what's your response?
Yeah.
It was pretty aggressive then.
Really?
So I can only imagine. And that was like through email and us, you know, phoning them and asking for a response. That was pretty aggressive. So I can only imagine what would happen if you're undercover in that situation. But obviously, the Ireland edition of the Times carries out risk assessments, and everything is above board just before I get in trouble at work again.
No, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
But it is absolutely risky. It's those people are, they have bizarre attitudes to women, and even worse attitudes to the media. Like, they believe that I'm part of a conspiracy theory, that I'm actively suppressing information that abortion causes breast cancer, that I know the truth, but for some inexplicable reason, they think that we're the liars. They think that we're the ones lying to women. You can't reason with that. Mm. You really, really can't.
And does it ever get kind of scary for you? I mean, you're exposing a lot of stuff for people that are very passionate. Like, I mean, will there be a point where I made one joke about the Ra on telly? And
how did that go?
Ugh.
How was your Twitter? How was your Twitter mentions after that?
I got Facebook messages to my personal page, and they were like angry, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to change my name to this ridiculous name. And now I get a lot less likes on my status, which I'm disappointed with, but that is...
Give it and take it away.
Exactly. Political satire has consequences.
Real life consequences.
Real life consequences. But, I mean, has anything ever happened, or are you expecting anything to happen?
Yeah, like, you get, for the past, that investigation only broke was at like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we've had, like, me and the editor have been getting a lot of emails at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, really, really long, really, really angry. And then there's people who get in touch and they say that they're praying for you. And you just get this insight into, like, these people think that they're morally right. Like, they're doing this because they're really passionate and they genuinely think that they're right. And like I said, when you're engaged, you can't reason with that. Like, turning around and saying there's no evidence, you can't say that abortion causes breast cancer, that's not true. Yeah. And when the person is turning around and going, it is, like, despite all of the evidence to the contrary, you are dealing with people who hate journalists. Like, they hate what we're doing, and they hate the stories, and they hate the potential consequences of a new law on agencies. But I've never, like, I'm not like fearing for my life or anything like that.
Cool, good.
I'm sure my flatmate would be like, get out.
Get out of my house.
Putting us at risk. No, I don't think. I think that is, I'm glad that in Ireland we're a little bit further away from that at the moment.
Yeah.
I know you can get that sort of extremism in the UK, in the US, sorry. You know, you've had those attacks on Planned Parenthood. But it is, I don't think you can't predict the way that those people will respond. But the worst you get is like an email or a really aggressive message sent to you.
It's not even as if you're really expressing an opinion on the morality of it. It's just, don't lie.
This is what kills me. Like, I've covered Eighth Amendment-y things, which obviously get really visceral for completely understandable reasons. Like, that's a debate that's been going on for 30 years. I couldn't believe when we started doing this, which is just, we just think that counsellors should tell the truth. That's all that it is.
Yeah.
And I can't believe how contentious it is. We never, I don't know, maybe I'm an idiot and I'm really naive, but I never expected this to be so contentious, that pro-life organisations would be having a go at us for doing it or saying that we're biased. Like, it's just, there's no regulation on agencies. You could set one up in the morning saying whatever you like. And these are women, like, after we do these stories, women get in touch and they don't want to do interviews or anything like that, but they just want to talk to somebody about what happened.
Yeah.
And these are well-educated women, you know, they're not scared teenagers who got duped into the wrong clinic and told something that was complete bollocks. And, you know, do we think that being something as important as a mother is something that you should be terrified into?
No.
Because you think you're going to die or turn into a child abuser, lose all your female organs, get cancer. Like, surely if... I have so much respect for pro-life campaigners because they're coming from a place where they genuinely and heartedly believe that abortion is morally wrong. But surely that argument is enough then that you don't have to resort to lying.
Yeah.
Like, if you truly believe that, surely the argument against abortion is strong enough that you don't have to resort to horrible fairy stories.
It's just the lying to get them in there as well. Like, they're saying they're pro... they're pretending to be a different, to have a different viewpoint just to get you in the room.
It's really insidious. Like they will, the reason that all these clinics are on Berkeley Street and Dorset Street, which is in Dublin, the streets meet at a corner. So really close together. And that's because there's a genuine one called Reproductive Choices on Berkeley Street. And I know that we've had women tell us that when they were going into Reproductive Choices, people from these other agencies would stop them on the street and say, we can give you the consultation for free. So if you're already worrying about paying for, say, a flight to Liverpool, yeah, that's going to be pretty compelling. The other thing that they do, which we've been slowly working on, is they pay for Google ads. So if you Google from an Irish IP address, how do I get an abortion in the UK, or abortion advice or something like that, you know, those yellow ads that pop up at the top, they're like paid for. They'll pay to make sure that theirs is the first result. And like 10 years ago, this is how long they've been operating, for decades and decades, they used to all be called like the Adams Women's Centre with two A's, so they'd be the first one on the crisis pregnancy page in the phone book.
Oh my God.
And they'd take out full page ads and stuff. They buy €45,000 ultrasound scan machines because they believe that if they make you look at a picture, it'll be tougher to terminate the pregnancy. These people are really dedicated to what they're doing. Like, they're renting premises, they're setting up business names. They're, you know, once they crowdfunded for a car, because one of them is based in Northern Ireland, and she would drive around and meet women in car parks with an ultrasound machine in the boot of her car.
Car park.
That's how dedicated they are to, and they don't want to waste their time on somebody who might not terminate a pregnancy. They're specifically targeting women who are trying to figure out how to get to the UK to have an abortion, or who want information on what's the law, what can I legally do. They don't want to waste their time on somebody who might continue with the pregnancy, because that's not saving a life in their mind.
So what do they offer anything to the woman for after she's given birth?
One of them, Gianna Care, obviously, because our reporter was not pregnant, we could only go so far with it. But Gianna Care says that it offers financial assistance.
Okay.
And some of them claim that they will put you in touch with an adoption agency. It's just worth mentioning the Women's Centre, the one that we exposed last year, is actually connected with a 1997 case where a separate agency was taken to the High Court after it was found that it was illegally adopting babies from women that it was pressuring into continuing with their pregnancies.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like this is, in 1997, the minister at the time said that he'd do something about this, and now it's 2017 and Simon Harris again is saying that he's going to do something about it, and there's been absolutely nothing.
And when you say absolutely nothing, there's nothing in the pipeline or anything. I mean, people were pretty outraged.
People were outraged. Ministers were outraged. Everyone was outraged. Labour introduced a bill pretty quickly, but the Oireachtas Health Committee the week before last ditched it because they said there's problems with it and
what
it won't work.
What are the problems?
I think it was unintended consequences. So it was going to regulate crisis pregnancy counsellors, but they were worried that, like, if you were a GP and I came into you and was like, I'm pregnant, I don't really know what to do, and you gave me some advice, would that be illegal because you're not a pregnancy counsellor? And the other thing is, you're dealing with people who are liars, and they were saying that it would be really easy for them to just say, I'm a crisis pregnancy advisor rather than counsellor, and they could continue to lie.
Oh my God.
But like in October, Simon Harris said that he would look at passing his own law, and he's saying now that he'll try to get something through before the summer. But with all like respect to the minister, I think we'll believe it when we see it. But even if that does happen, Alison, like, you're talking about years before you could shut those places down. You'd have to set up, like, if you were going to regulate it, you'd have to set up like a kind of board, some sort of oversight body that would check all these clinics and agencies and see what they're doing. This is just, like I was saying at the start, we're always so righteous about things retrospectively. Politicians have known about this for years and years and years. There's journalists better than me and activists older than me who've been working on this when I was like in primary school. Yeah. There's no reason. You don't have to have a referendum. You literally just have to change the law.
Wow. What can people do now? Is there any...
Write to your TD. Okay. Actually, no, I can't say that because I'm a reporter. But if you were to, if you felt strongly about this, you could write to your TD, I suppose. But obviously I'm not advocating that
people
should.
No, no, no. And I'm sorry for asking you.
No. I answered it. Hypothetically speaking, you could write to your TD and say that this is something. And this is the one thing I really want to highlight is we've only done the investigations in Dublin because just for resource reasons. But a lot of these people, like I know Gianna Kerr has a clinic in Cork. Ask Magella will travel all over the country, and the Women's Centre claimed to have agencies in like Galway, Limerick. This is a nationwide problem.
Yeah. The Midlands, always left out though. Once again, it's only the coast.
Dublin gets everything.
Dublin
gets all the deceitful agencies. It's so unfair.
They get the Ed Sheeran. They get the... Oh my gosh. So tell me about other reports that you've done, because that was like a big one that I felt changed a lot of attitudes or brought stuff to light.
But oh, good, what are okay.
you? Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't hear about it before. I was just like, oh,
this is terrible.
Those bastards. You're chipping away at my sunny disposition every day. Everyone is evil.
You can't trust anyone.
Okay? Anyone.
Nobody.
Anyone.
The world is a bad place.
What, like, that seemed like there was, like, I felt like the government would do something about it. Is there anything else that you're kind of reporting on now that you'd like to see changed to help people?
Yeah, I have a list of things I'd like to see changed. One that I'm sure by the time this podcast is out, I'm not going to, like, my story in the paper tomorrow, which will be, was in Saturday's paper.
We're talking on Good Friday. It's a great Friday.
The pub wasn't open. So I'll both had to sit down here and have a chat.
I suppose I'll do a podcast. Can't drink.
Suppose I'll do some work. Can't drink. So in tomorrow's Ireland edition of the Times, I almost got the name wrong there myself. There's this is wrecking my head, right? So nobody knows how many women in Ireland, how many women or men have been victims of sexual crime or domestic abuse.
Yeah.
And we can't trust the Garda statistics because I don't know, it would be like 3 million or something based on the breathalyzer thing. But Frances Fitzgerald herself had said that she can't trust the Garda statistics. So in like 2002, they did this big thing called Savvy, where they just did this massive piece of research and just sussed out how many people had had experiences of sexual violence, sexual crime, all that sort of stuff. Did you report? Why didn't you report? Like really, really in-depth, amazing.
Yeah.
And they promised they'd do another one. And it would only cost €1 million. Without this, you cannot be seriously saying that you're accurately writing laws that can tackle sexual violence, sexual crime or domestic abuse, because you don't have a clue how many people are experiencing it. Frances Fitzgerald asked the Minister for Health, Minister for Education and Minister for Children and Youth Affairs to help her share the cost, which is €1 million. And everyone said no. And now they're going to scrap it, because they just can't get the money together. So we're going to be writing policy on a problem that we have no idea the extent of it. Obviously, you can't trust the Garda statistics because not everyone reports either.
No.
So nobody has a clue how bad sexual violence is in this country. It would only cost €1 million and they just won't do it. It's like 16 years ago was the last time we had accurate information. You and me both know, like, the attitudes to consent have completely changed. There's probably people in that space of time who've only now realised that they were raped.
Yeah,
they might have been in a relationship, or, you know, it wasn't the classic stranger danger type rape that you see.
That's what I thought rape was.
That's what we all thought rape was. But now, like,
I was like, he couldn't be a rapist.
I know you. Literally. Like, but we know now it's the ones you know that you're... That's where most of the cases of sexual violence come from. And it's not a big glamorous story where you have an undercover video like me with Frances Fitzgerald going, so why won't you fund the second study? Like, it's a really mundane story. It's just a process. It's a government thing. But it makes me so angry because it would make such a difference. And it's just more evidence of this government will commission studies left, right and centre and focus groups and citizens' assemblies and all this sort of shite.
Yeah.
Why won't they do this? Like, it makes me visibly upset. I just think it's another example of a degradation of duty when it comes to problems that majorly affect women.
Mm, mm. It's just, That when you talk about the Citizens Assembly, like how much did that cost? Because I watched a bit of it and it looked like there was a panel of people arguing about abortion while other people are trying to eat a carvery. Like it was just, which I would love.
It is in a hotel. There probably is a carvery available somewhere.
There better be.
The thing about the they're doing this properly. The thing about the Citizens Assembly is it was one of the most amazing things that had ever happened to the abortion debate, in that it united the pro-life and pro-choice side, because everyone hated the idea so much. Everyone absolutely hated it. But in fairness, like, we criticised it a fair bit in the paper, but having gone to it, I think that it probably is one of the most in-depth examinations of a public policy issue ever.
Right.
And you can see these were just citizens, like people who were just giving up their weekend and going to some hotel in Meath and probably having a carvery. I don't know. I'll double check.
Can you investigate that for me, please? What were the vegetable options?
Just an undercover video of like ham.
Yeah. Change the voice of the person serving it. I mean, they've not to do it, so I'd be like, well, brief. Brief or sir.
Just protect his identity.
Yeah. Would you like gravy?
But other than that, the second most important story from the Citizens Assembly is that they're actually doing like a really amazing job, and the citizens seem to get really like bolshy.
Right, okay.
And like asking loads of questions, and they're talking about things about abortion legislation I've never heard anybody talk about before. Like from covering it from a politics point of view or like the activism point of view, I've never heard people talk in depth in this sort of platform way about the ways that you would legislate for access in cases of rape, or, you know, the constitutional rights that the fetus might have had before the Eighth Amendment went in. And is that going to lead to like a big legal battle? Like, it's been really, really interesting. I would just worry that what they're going to do now is hand it over to the politicians.
Yeah.
And I mean, nobody knows how long that's going to take or how much of a balls they could make of that.
And they have enough carveries.
They have enough. Once again, Dublin gets everything. More carveries from Dublin.
They get shit carveries.
Yeah, they're really bad. Really bad.
You call this a carvery? It's a monstrosity. But
it's a disgrace.
What is this? You're only 3 years into this. Are you going to continue with the women's stuff, or like, does it given you? Would you like to continue in the political sphere, or go into more kind of I was going to say lifestyle, but
because you've done. I would love to be one of those people who gets like makeup sent to them. If anyone's really listening to this and wants to send me makeup, that would be great, because I never get that from this side of journalism. But I suppose one of the bleakest things is if you want to cover the kind of journalism that's aimed at like women's lives and things that how things are shit for women, I'm never going to run out of stuff to cover. Like, there's not going to be a day where I show up and the editor is like, well, it's a feminist utopia now, so you may as well like sport or business, like, do you want to go and cover that instead? Like, it's just going to be a perpetual thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I suppose I really wanted to come back to Ireland, because to sound absolutely insufferable, I suppose people get into journalism because they do want to make the world a little bit better, and it's nicer if you get to do it in your own country for the benefit of like other gals.
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
It's really easy. It's not hard work if you're doing something from that point of view.
Yeah.
And I just love when people accuse you of having like a feminist agenda. Like, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Do you get like who on Twitter? Or
Men on Twitter aren't nice. I don't know if you
That's sexist. I don't know if you... That's sexist.
They're really, some of them are I don't know if you've come across that.
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Did you get that when you went on Cutting Edge?
I did. Yeah.
I did too.
And he was like, I was talking about Tinder. Yeah. And I checked my phone afterwards. He was like, no wonder she's single. These feminists are so unattractive. This guy was like one of the most unattractive people. And you're just sitting there looking at your phone going, I wouldn't ride you if there was like a matriarchy in the morning. If they would like bring down the patriarchy, I still wouldn't look at you twice in the corner of coppers. These men are just like, oh, that was the other thing as well. I came off it and I talked about being single on television, which is such a bad idea.
Oh really? What happened then?
You know you have your other messages on your Facebook?
Yeah.
Yeah, for people who aren't friends with you. I just had like every lonely dad in Ireland.
No.
Like, people in like Westmeath and stuff were like, do you want to go for a coffee?
Oh my God. Should have taken them up. They're good men there.
You wouldn't find the likes of those in Dublin.
Oh my God.
I should be mean. Some of those people, I'm sure some of those men were lovely, but it was more the volume.
Really?
Really like freaked me out.
And what was it like going on the cutting edge for you?
I was terrified. I was so scared. I was petrified because it's so personal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just scared that I'd start yelling at George Hook. Like flip a table and be like, well, I told you all those feminists are shrill.
Journalist glasses man on TV.
Brendan O'Connor trying to like pull me off.
Yeah. No,
how
Brendan!
Gender quotas are good.
Let me finish.
So yeah, I was trying to be like a polite and reasonable woman.
Yeah, I'm going on it next. Like, well, this is coming out Wednesday.
Who are you on with? Is it going to be an all female panel?
Yeah, yeah.
That's really. He said he wanted to do that, didn't he, Brendan?
Yeah, he's getting his wish.
I knew. I read an interview like that he'd done in the Sunday Independent before the series started, before I was going to go on. And he was kind of saying like, yeah, I just kind of want loads of like anonymous women. Like kind of like less well-known women. And I was like, oh, that's me.
He wanted that.
The token young girl.
Oh my, like I feel the last time I went on, like I tried to express an opinion on feminism, which came out as all men are responsible for okay.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it's like, oh, I'll just do jokes now. So that's what I planned to do.
Well, I was just really like, I was very serious and like, you know, feminism is good.
Yeah.
And social welfare is good.
It is good. I don't know anyone who should think.
But it's unbelievable when you're on television, you're like, is that boring? To say that people should have rights, is that like too boring?
I know, but I love that you're not one of these people that pretends to have an opinion.
Oh,
for.
I know.
Yeah, do you know people that are like, do you know what I hate? Roast chicken. Roast chicken is disgusting. Everyone loves roast chicken. What are you on about? Roast chicken doesn't
exist.
But it's
so lucrative. There's going to be like a double page spread in one of the Sunday papers being like, roast chicken.
Yeah.
Bad.
And you'll probably win like Journalist of the Year or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it always starts off with like, now I know millennials are going to hate me for this, yeah, but pull up a chair, guys, and listen to my boring opinion.
Yeah, I hate feminazi roast chickens.
What the repeal movement can learn from roast chicken.
Yeah, what can they? The roast chickens have got a crispy skin.
Unlike you thin-skinned feminists.
Yeah. Oh, you're just clucking away like an alive chicken when you could be in a roast chicken. I'm so worried about expressing opinions on TV because I think my opinions are class, but other people might not.
Well, I'm sweating now because I think my opinions are class, but I've said all sorts of shit on this podcast that my editor is going to be so angry.
Your editor's a bollocks. Now, cut that out. Don't censor me. I don't know your editor at all.
He's a lovely person.
He is. Oh, wait. I think I met him when I was filming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's a nice man.
Yeah, he is a nice man.
One of those nice men that I've heard so much about. Obviously, the rest are bollocks.
Very rare.
Very, very rare. Very rare.
All men are potential not nice men. That's my motto. That's my feminist mantra.
Doesn't fit on a banner, does it?
No.
For like the review. Men, still bad.
Still bad.
Although that's basically all of my journalism.
Yeah.
Men, still bad.
Would you, I wonder, I just keep imagining you in like some Diane Keaton vehicle where it's like, oh, she dresses up as a man to see what life is like.
I might not come back. I'd be like, wow, getting no street harassment today. And when I talk in a meeting, everyone's listening. What is this about?
Me forever now.
That's it, me with like a little mustache and a really bad suit.
I can see it now. Oh, what would you call Evan? It would have to be Evan.
Evan Coyne.
Evan Coyne?
Yeah, and suddenly like TDs would call me back. And
What's it like? hanging out with TDs. Like, don't name any specifics and don't make it weird for your job. But I interviewed Eamon Gilmore when I was a young radio researcher.
Oh, you told me about this.
And I thought I was hot shit.
Like Sean O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Like, so Eamon.
And I doorstepped him outside the Super Value with that loan. Excuse me, Eamon. Alison Spittle from I-105-107, the youth station that's just across the road.
He could have politely asked you to, but no.
Yeah. And I was like 19. I'm probably dressed in like a circus tent. Just got Eamon.
What were you asking him?
I asked him like loads of like very general questions, like how do you think you're gonna do in a general election? Just, you know, like, and he was like, very well.
I love that.
I don't ever get the leaders of parties that have like 14 people running.
Yeah.
And they talk about, you know, them as potential Taoiseachs. I'm like, it ain't gonna happen, you know.
But then elections kind of make me sad because they're all just doing their best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, imagine if like loads of people could just decide they don't want me to be a journalist anymore and have a vote. That would be devastating.
That is so hard. Yeah. And I covered Galway when the election day happened, and I interviewed, like, she's a semi-famous senator now. And
well, what a title to have.
Yeah. So she didn't win. But I was like interviewing her and I was like, why is she so sad?
The empathy.
Why does
that? What's your problem?
Like, I'm interviewed here. I've got a smile. No, I realize, like, you know, that's something she's worked for years and hasn't.
Her whole life, like.
Yeah, I feel bad. Politicians are humans.
I know, yeah, they are.
You forget that.
You do, very quickly.
Yeah, you do. Or especially when they're humiliated and stuff. You kind of forget. Like, everyone used to go to town on Alan Shatter because he wrote like a semi-sexual novel. And I'm like, the man's being creative. We're all semi-sexual. In some way.
Stop kink-shaming Alan Shatter.
It's not that big of a kink.
No, he was. Really straightforward. Fantasy. He was ahead of the game. That was before 50 Shades, wasn't it?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. He should be a pioneer.
Like, he's nobody's laughing now.
He's a sexual pioneer.
Good for him.
That's my favourite job title ever. What are you? I'm a sexual pioneer.
Sexual pioneer at TD. Yeah. On a business card. Yeah.
I don't think you'd be elected.
Which constituency do you think would be most likely to elect a sexual pioneer? Tipperary, because I just think you need to be from Tipperary and you can win there.
Oh, you totally. If you're like, do you know what? Let's, because I had in Westmead, there was a guy that owned the puppy farm, right? And
Lars, like the sad ones.
Yes, the sad ones. What's the happy ones where they like, where they grow like spuds and you have lifted up, you're like, ooh, Labradors. Yeah, the sad puppy farm, you know. And
I thought you meant like maybe he had a farm and lots of dogs. I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. How you told me there was good men in Westmead.
How would he make a profit from that, Ellen? Huh? You're head of the clouds. But he, so anyway, like, he was like, there was laws coming in against the puppy farms.
And
he was like, fuck this. The only way I can change this is to run for office. So I got one of his pamphlets and it's like, I'm sick of the government telling us what to do.
Are you serious? I would watch this man's biopic.
I swear to God. And he ran in two constituencies.
Are you
he ran in
allowed?
After. Yeah, you can't. In Westmead, the last, so the election before this one, when I was like living in Westmead and like in it, like breathing it, like there was two lads that ran in Westmead in different constituencies. There was one lad who ran in Westmead and also ran in Dublin, and he bought a park, like a square, and you know, it's a place for people to like,
it's a public space.
Yeah, for them to walk their dogs and shit. And he's like, I want a car park, and they're like, no. We need this for greenery and stuff to make our lives better. He's like, no, man, I bought this. I should have a big multi-story car park. So we thought the people of Westmead would be like,
Delighted.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to his cause. So he was like, we got our land off the English and now we're being told what to do with our land by the government. I just love people that run on that, you know? At least they're not lying. Yeah.
No, at least they're like straight up. So what was he going to do? Get into power and...
He was going to get into power.
Just pick poppy firm.
Just break into the doll and go right and change the stuff up. He's like, I'm going to bring in a bill there. The fuck puppies bill. He just really hated puppies.
That is a bold mandate. Poppy hating.
Puppy hate. And do you remember in the European election year, I remember I was a kid and there was all these posters around that lawn. It was like, do you know what? Can I quickly Google it?
Yes, please.
Because he was like, I keep going.
Where is he now?
With this guy?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe like...
If you're listening.
Do you still own a puppy fur?
I'm calling the guards.
There was this guy called Clifford T. I find his... Is it Clifford T? No, it's not Clifford T. Ward. He's a singer.
Please don't libel anyone
else. Yeah, I will not. Clifford T. And as well as that, I nearly libeled him because I was like, his poster said free the paedophiles and it wasn't that. It was jail them. It was definitely like... It was definitely anti.
That's a big, what a mix up at the printers. Yeah, that was.
Yeah. You've destroyed my campaign.
Oh well, I'm just going to have to run on this. Yeah,
spent all the money.
That's our budget for the year. There has to be somebody out there.
Yeah. Puppy farms and pedophiles. Do you know what? I'll find it out. I said European election jail pedos and it should
well, a lot of results I'd say.
Oh, these are just very sad stories actually. Oh, no. One starting off with horrifying. Oh, yeah, I can't find it.
Well, that's one for later.
I know.
I'll add this to the list of things I'm supposed to investigate.
Google must think I'm so weird. I was Googling horrific things that I half know about, so I just say the word. So it's like murder.
Question mark?
At loan.
That's my biggest fear, that I'll get like phone hacked.
Really?
And, like some anti-abortion activist will be like, my God, her life is so sad.
Do an expose here.
Yeah, exactly.
She has no female organs to fail. What else should I ask you now at this stage? Oh, what did you do for the Leaving Cert English paper? What story did you do?
Oh my God.
It's my favourite question.
It was like you studied a book or something, didn't you?
You could do an essay or you could do a totally... I did a totally made up story. I've said this about 4 times on this podcast, but it was about a man who grew up and he was a boy. And this monk would like take a special interest in him. He lived in the outskirts of this monastery.
Dark fast.
No, it's a good tale.
Oh, right, okay.
But like the monk would put his hands on his shoulder and go, son, like, but he didn't know. Anyway, it came to pass that he was his father and he had to protect the monastery from the forces that be, I think it was Vikings or Brits.
Wow, you had an interesting youth.
I know, I drew a whole map for it and everything, like I showed them.
That's amazing.
And I only got a D, like I nearly didn't get into my college of choice.
I would have sent that back to be remarked.
I know, I should have, because I was convinced because I didn't get the grade to go to my college that I was going to stay in England and become a telesalesperson. And then my college rang me one day, I was like, hey, well, you're supposed to come in and register. I was like, I'm in England. I'm selling boiler insurance to shitheads. Like, this is my life now.
You should be like the poster child for the CAO.
I should
be like, please pay attention when you fill in this form.
I should be the poster child for a lot of things I did when I was 17. I really fucked up. Like my teacher, do you remember history? I did history in the Leaving Cert, and in my it was the first year that like projects were brought in, which you did all year, and then you're supposed to hand it in,
oh,
and it's like 40% of your grade. And I was elected as a representative of my school on Westmeath Junior County Council because I was like really into politics. And my history teacher was like, Alison, you have to hand in this your project today, or you'll lose 40%. And I was like, but I really want to go. to Mullingar to get my free Carvery and meet this boy I fancy at the junior county council. So I just went. I really fucked up my name, sir, for a Carvery. I think she was like, what are you doing? The Carvery is calling. I gotta go.
Literally, like, any rural hotel on a roundabout would have a Carvery.
But it was free and paid for by the government. What do you expect?
I know. I do it again.
I mean, I just didn't believe her.
Fake news.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep walking. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Did you? I did my project on like Nazis that lived in Athlone because they used to have an internment camp in Athlone.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's actually interesting.
And I know. It was such a... And I went to the library. I really should have put that project in. Where is it now,
Alison?
I don't know. Thank you so much. That was so much fun. Hello, hashtag apricot party. How are you getting on? It's Wednesday. I am on Brendan O'Connor show tonight. Tune in. Now I've done the advertisement for that. Is there anything else I need to talk about? I'm on in Kilkenny. At Kilkenny Cat Laughs. Go to their website and check that out. I have a website as well, alisonspittle.com. I haven't updated it in more than a year, so hopefully that'll spur me on to do it now, and then I'll draw something for you. Or anyway, I took a pill, one of those cold and flu pills. I didn't have a cold or a flu, but I had a slight headache. That headache is gone now, but I feel like I'm just stuck in a duvet and I just can't get out of it. So. Has anyone got any cocaine? If so, please get in contact. Very much thanks. Thanks very much to Sarah Garvey, Andrea Farrell, the Alison Spittle team, No Monster Club, who did a fantastic introduction song, and William Conway, who did the art. Also, Alan Bennett as a part of the Head Stuff. He's a part of the Head Stuff podcast network, and he's a very nice man, and I'm just going to thank him for all the help. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Head Stuff podcast network.